Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Reassurance is knowing our pensions will be supporting you in the years ahead. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension today.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's first official visit to Ireland tomorrow comes at a critical time after US-backed talks achieved only constructive progress on a complex peace deal. The high-stakes Dublin visit will focus on securing Irish backing for EU accession and trade, strengthening Kyiv's position against pressure from Washington to concede territory for peace. I'm joined now by Paul Hosford, Acting Political Editor for the Irish Examiner. Paul, what do we know about the itinerary for this visit at this stage?
Good evening, Katie. Yeah, I suppose, as is normal with visits like this, we don't know a whole lot about the itinerary. We do know that tomorrow afternoon, Volodymyr Zelensky will address the Oireachtas. He will, before that, meet with Taoiseach Micheál Martin. He'll pay a courtesy call to President Catherine Connolly. And then, I suppose, the centrepiece of this day is the address to the Oireachtas. Now, you might remember in 2022, just after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky addressed the joint Oireachtas by video link. It was the first time that anyone had ever video linked into the Oireachtas. It was I suppose it came at the beginning of that invasion, and I suppose was something that was really, warmly received at the time. But now, like you laid out there, this visit comes at a completely different stage in this war, with Volodymyr Zelensky looking to receive European backing or solidify European backing for whatever comes next in the war with Russia.
And this Ireland-Ukraine Economic Forum, Paul, what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so this is the launch of the Ireland-Ukraine Economic Forum. We know that it'll take place just after the address to the houses of the Oireachtas. It's not an open invitation for the media. So there's talk of live streaming it. It's part of the overall acknowledgement of what Simon Harris talked about today, of the number of Ukrainians who have come here who are contributing to the Irish economy, contributing to Irish society. We know that, you know, that tens of thousands of Ukrainians are here, have made Ireland their home in the last 3 years, and it's about just recognizing that as a reality and looking to build on that, particularly in the rebuilding phase of Ukraine.
And I see the Irish Times is reporting this afternoon that there was a plan. We didn't know about this plan. This hadn't been revealed, but there had been a plan in place to phase out state-funded accommodation for Ukrainians here, but that plan has now been dropped.
Yeah, this is a story from Ellen Coyne this afternoon about a plan to drop state-funded commercial accommodation. This is something that in 2024 had been backed, was considered by officials just amid the concerns about the cost and availability of accommodation. If you go back to December 2024, a year ago now, there really was a pinch on the availability of accommodation for both international protection and for benefits of temporary protection, those people who come from Ukraine. So this is something that was considered. The department has told the Irish Times today that there's no plan to phase out all state-funded accommodation contracts, but the department works to consolidate and rationalise its accommodation portfolio. This is, I suppose, in light of something that was touched on today at the launch of the new tourism strategy. Enterprise Minister Peter Burke talked about how at one stage about 17% of hotel rooms in Ireland were entered into state contracts. That's down to about 5% now. So there is a greater availability, but it's something that government is still very keenly aware of.
Indeed. Ireland, of course, a strong advocate for Ukraine's EU membership. This is going to be a key priority for Volodymyr Zelensky, not just here, but in this tour of Europe that he's now launching from here.
Yeah, it's always been, I suppose, one of the bigger things in this war with Russia. In February 2022, Ukraine applied for EU membership, but wasn't given candidate status until June of that year. It's a long process, being accepted into the EU. Ireland has been very, very vocal in its support of Ukraine, particularly since the Russian invasion. I think if you look at, I suppose, one of the things that Simon Harris mentioned today, Ireland takes up the presidency of the EU in July. It's very, I suppose, it's timely that Vladimir Zelensky is coming here, both in that he can update Ireland ahead of the presidency, but also that Ireland as president for that 6 months next year can carry the, I suppose, wave the flag for Ukrainian accession. It's something that I suppose most in Europe are I suppose, not necessarily fully supportive of, but most are minded to the accession of Ukraine, and Ireland has kind of led out on that and has been very vocal on supporting our Ukrainian accession for a long time.
Okay. Thanks for that. That's Paul Hosford there, acting political editor for the Irish Examiner.
We're also joined by Scott Lucas, Professor of American Studies and International Politics at UCD's Clinton Institute. Good evening to you, Scott.
Very good evening.
You heard Paul there. One of the things he was saying is very much on Volodymyr Zelensky's radar is Ireland taking up the presidency of the EU Council in the latter half of next year. Is that what makes Ireland an attractive stop on any itinerary?
Well, I think Ireland's an attractive stop anyway. But in terms of the seriousness of what Kyiv's facing, Ireland has this key place in terms of the EU's financial and economic decisions at a point where that Ukrainian resistance needs reinforcement against an invasion that will be in its fifth year. Ukraine will need an estimated 136 billion euros over the course of the next 2 years to keep the government running. Almost all of Ukraine's taxes go, of course, to the military effort. So how do you maintain public services? How do you maintain transport, education? How do you maintain the hospitals? How do you maintain welfare payments? Even as Russia is trying to bomb Ukraine out of existence day after day, the EU is the frontline supporter. And indeed, the EU is in the midst of an important debate about whether those contributions come from individual states, whether they come from the EU borrowing money, or whether it comes from Europe finally releasing frozen Russian assets to be used to support Ukraine.
Right. The difficulty there being that Belgium, where those assets are being held, is concerned mm-hmm. that under a treaty from the 90s, they would be sued if they tried to make use of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And they fear that they would catch the legal liability if Russia tried to claim under international law that this was an unwarranted confiscation. So I think we're really in the position where Belgium, behind the scenes, is asking for EU assurances that the liabilities will be shared rather than Brussels, which holds two-thirds of the assets, taking the brunt of any hit. I am not saying that this will inevitably lead to a compromise where the assets will be released for Ukraine, but I think that's probably where we are in terms of discussions as we go into 2026.
Okay, and Volodymyr Zelensky, probably keen Ireland would make positive reassuring noises to Belgium in that regard when he's here.
Yeah, in other words, the thing here is that Ireland is part of this collective effort. And, you know, it's something which is distinctive about the EU. It has to move almost as a unanimous or near unanimous bloc. What has been impressive is that up to now it has, despite the fact that there are two spoilers, pro-Kremlin spoilers within the EU, Hungary and Slovakia. The EU has been the number one state in assistance to Ukraine. When you take both the military and the economic effort combined, and when you link it to what individual states are providing. So I think the EU quite often is cumbersome and moves slowly, but it has done its bit in maintaining Ukraine. And as you mentioned in your previous report, Ireland has both that place at the head of the EU next year, and it has this symbolic place in terms of how many Ukrainian refugees it took in, how receptive it has been, and how, even though it is a militarily neutral country, it still maintains its place in defense against an aggressor.
And maybe set the scene for what Volodymyr Zelensky is facing here as he goes around to Europe and tries to drum up support on a variety of issues in different countries. The US and their counterparts in Russia meeting over his head, as it were. He must have concerns about what's going to come out of that meeting between the Trump's envoy Witkoff in Moscow.
Well, we've got two competing proposals here, and one proposal, the one that threatens not only Ukraine but Europe, is a collusion between the Kremlin which has been developing the proposal since April and is now working with two Trump advisors, his envoy Steve Witkoff, his son-in-law Jared Kushner. And at the end of October, the outcome of this was what is misleadingly being presented as a Trump peace plan. It's actually a Russian ultimatum for Ukraine to give up more territory, a ban on Ukraine ever joining NATO, Ukraine kept militarily weak permanently through restrictions on Western assistance and on troop levels, while Russia has sanctions lifted and rejoins the G8. However, last week, Europe and Ukraine used the support of the U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio to put a counterproposal. First, you start with a ceasefire. You do not make any determination on those other issues before you get a halt on the air and ground attacks. Then you can discuss security guarantees for Ukraine. Then you can maintain the front lines rather than giving Russia more territory. And you set tests for Russia to pass before there's any question of the lifting of sanctions. Right now, those two proposals are competing with each other. The Ukraine-Europe proposal was discussed yesterday in Florida with Rubio at the head of the U.S. delegation. Now, as Witkoff and Kushner go to the Kremlin, do they actually present that proposal for a ceasefire, or do they go back into Vladimir Putin's pocket because, and this is important, that Russian proposal includes joint U.S.-Russian economic projects from which some members of the Trump administration could benefit.
And I was just going to ask you about that. The Wall Street Journal claiming over the weekend the peace plan's real motive is economic, basically a transactional issue with the U.S. securing commercial access to resources there. So if true, I mean, how much does this weaken Washington's hand in dealing with its European allies and its legitimacy in acting as any form of an honest broker on behalf of Ukraine?
Well, Washington is the Trump administration is dysfunctional. You've got one side that is, I think, functional in terms of Marco Rubio, supported by working level officials in the State Department, intelligence services, the military, trying to maintain Ukraine's defense against Russia. But the Witkoff-Kushner faction, supported by Vice President J.D. Vance, that Kremlin proposal includes the U.S. getting 50% of profits from a fund for Ukraine reconstruction and the U.S. getting compensation for any security guarantees to Ukraine. So there's both an overall benefit to the United States. And then specifically, since April, the Kremlin has pushed economic projects, which include links for rare earth minerals, energy projects, among those who have been in direct contact with Russians, including sanctioned oligarchs, is ExxonMobil, the U.S. oil company, and two major donors to Donald Trump, one of whom is a close university friend of Donald Trump Jr. So this personal economic dimension of Donald Trump and his government is what is unsettling, even disrupting the notion of alliance, even as some others within the United States realize how important European security remains.
Okay, Scott Lucas, thanks very much for that. And earlier, of course, from Paul Hosford. Thanks for joining us.
Coming up, Katrina Redmond with batch cook recipes to take some of the work out of Christmas dinner. Plus, what do new border rules on cigarette and tobacco allowances mean for you?